Hello, everyone, and welcome to Teach Me Teacher, a podcast for educators, where we, the teachers, become students ourselves. I'm your host, Jacob Chastain, and today I am sitting with Teacher of the Year of Richland Middle School, Lindsay Stewart, and we are going to talk about everything, what her mind's doing. We're going to get into the mind of Teacher of the Year. All right, Lindsay, welcome to the hot seat.
Hi.
I'm just going through every teacher at RMS.
Yeah.
Not only RMS, though. We got people lined up at other schools.
I know.
It's going down.
You've been awesome. I'm really impressed with this whole podcast thing.
I appreciate it. But I also appreciate you coming in. Because not everyone wants to sit in front of a microphone.
No. We do not.
That's okay.
A true statement. It is.
It's okay. The reason I wanted you on... One, because we're bros, okay?
Yes.
Had some times together,
yes.
Right?
Yes. I've heard you've been sharing some stories about me, too, so we're going to have to talk about that.
Well, do you want to share them on the podcast?
On the podcast. No.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah. Okay.
But no, more specifically, it's because you're a rock star, right? In a minute, we're going to get into a little bit more details about that, but I think you're going to add just to... people that listen to this podcast, you know, we do topical stuff, talk about some big things, talked about Betsy DeVos, all that good stuff. But we haven't had a podcast in a long time where I sat down with the teacher. We just talk shop.
Okay.
Right? So that's what this is going to be for you.
Sounds good.
But really, you know, just how we start every episode, I want you to just tell us, the audience, you know, who you are, when you became a teacher, all that, anything you want us to know about you before we start talking.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you having me on here. So I am an eighth grade science teacher here at Richland Middle School. This is actually my second year to be a teacher. I worked in a marketing research firm for about 7 years before I decided to go back to school to be a teacher. I sat behind a desk every day and was bored and just always helped out with the kids in my church, the youth there, and really enjoyed that. And so I decided, let's go be a teacher. So I went back to school for 2 years, finished, went student teaching and all of that, and then have been here at Richland Middle School for 2 years.
That's crazy.
Yay.
So you got bored.
I did.
And you were like, what is the opposite of bored?
Teaching eighth graders.
Yeah, you jumped to eighth grade.
Teaching eighth graders.
Did you know that you were going to do science?
Well, so from day one, even being in school, I was always a math science person. Everything in my brain is black and white and needs a formula, needs a right or wrong answer. And so I do have a small creative side to me, but most of the time I've always been very logical, methodical kind of thinker. So it's always been a math science brain. And I love science because you get to do a lot of really cool stuff with science, and kids usually like science, so that is already in your little back pocket to help you even be a better teacher. I didn't like that.
You're good. No. Well, no, I mean, you have a good point to where the science is probably, you know, out of all the subjects that I would do, it's social studies, science, and ELA. Do ELA currently. I taught social studies my first year. But science is definitely, you know, if I ever did branch out, I think that would be my other place to go because it is... You know, I'm not as black and white. I'm definitely more on the fluffy side of the brain. But I love the questioning aspect.
Yeah. And you get to investigate a lot, too. So there aren't, you know, you have a lot of questions when you go into science. You get to blow stuff up, you know, every now and then. And so it's just more of that what's kind of out there part of your brain where you get to do a lot of labs and hands-on stuff. And so it's always really exciting to be in science.
Yeah. No, I totally get it. But small factoid for you, you know, you briefly just, you know, teacher for 2 years. And if they didn't hear me say at the beginning, teacher of the year.
Yes, thank you. Stop. Really.
What a rock star, though. What? I mean, how does it, being a second year teacher, being teacher of the year, what is going through your brain or what went through your brain when, you know, from nomination to actuality?
So I'm still like just completely blown away, honestly. Like I appreciate the recognition. I really do. I just hate that it is so public because that is not my personality even at all. But I've always worked hard at things. And so I don't want to let anyone down. I don't want to let my kids down. They're relying on me for their success in passing that STAR test and getting all the information that they need to know for eighth grade. And so I just want to make it fun for them and exciting for them to be at school. And so I just work really, really hard to make sure that they are taken care of, and that they know that they, you know, can be successful at things and feel confident.
So I gotta ask. I know, you know, I don't know much about being Teacher of the Year.
Can we not? We probably have to say that like every time, because it's gonna really just drive me crazy.
What else am I supposed to call it?
I don't know.
Being the top teacher on campus?
I don't know why I have such an issue with it, because I work with some amazing people, and I mean, they pour out their heart and souls every day to these kids too, and so they all should get recognized too. So it's just so uncomfortable to say that I'm the only Teacher of the Year at this school, and we all are Teacher of the Year. We all are.
Well, okay, so this brings up an interesting point. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk about this for a minute.
Okay.
So, really awkward for you to be like, you know, pushed up to a pedestal of some sort. But what is Teacher of the Year? What does that mean to you to be put on a pedestal? Not in the sense of like, oh, you know, I'm recognized for what I'm doing, but like the term Teacher of the Year, clearly you're not comfortable with the term.
No.
So what is it about it that makes you uncomfortable? Or what is it that, like, what is that term really, what's it doing in your brain to get this reaction?
I don't know, honestly. I mean, I think it's just the recognition that, like, I am singling out myself, or not me personally, but I am being singled out as the Teacher of the Year with this recognition, and I know darn well that I'm not the only one that deserves that recognition on this campus, because there are teachers that work all the time and put their heart and soul into what they do, to making sure that these kids are loved on and supported and cared for, and so I just don't like the singling out aspect. I wish we could have Teachers of the Year, and I'd be totally fine with that if I was part of a group that worked out this. So that's my issue, and that's just my personality. I don't like being up there on the spotlight, and I know that makes no sense being a teacher when you have to stand in front of, you know, 150 children every day, but that's totally different.
I don't know how strange that is, because I've talked to a lot of people that are teachers, you know, on this podcast, or I've talked to people about being on it, and just even though they're not really on a pedestal, they're behind a microphone, but the fact that they're going to be heard by hundreds of people around the world is nerve-wracking. Yeah. But to me, it's like, you know, whatever. It's what I do. But
I wish I had that. Well, it's
funny that teachers, people who are constantly having to be on, you know, for better or for worse, for their children or their students, you know, whatever age you're teaching, that once you change the public sphere, the fear comes out. Right. Or the awkwardness, I guess, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So it's not that un-
Well, thing. Good. So I'm not the only one that feels that way.
Yeah, but I do have another question just with this title that you've gained. There's things you have to do, right?
Oh, gosh.
Once you become Teacher of the Year?
Yes.
So for anyone who doesn't know, because
don't become Teacher of the Year. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
Well, I've heard, you know, I've had Melinda Bowles on the podcast. Yeah. She was Teacher of the Year. Chris Alegria, Teacher of the Year. Right? And those, you know, the last two that have been here, so. Yeah. And you're the third. I never asked them the process of that, so it's your turn. So what's this thing that has come to you with this title?
So I was recognized Teacher of the Year, and then within, I don't know, a couple of weeks, I was given this packet of information that I had to fill out. So I had to answer questions of all of the... my philosophy of teaching, what makes me a great teacher? That was an awkward question to answer, because I don't want to answer that question. what makes me an awesome teacher? What do I do in the classroom that, you know, exemplifies Teacher of the Year? How do you help the teaching community? What's an inspirational story? So just all these questions that you have to fill out, this huge packet, that's one thing. Then you have to go get your picture taken and sit in front of a video. So tape record video of you telling a 60 to 90 second story of either an inspirational story or why you teach, what keeps you teaching. So answering one of those questions in front of a camera. So again, another microphone involved in 400 plus people watching. You have to submit pictures of you teaching. So, yeah, that's been awkward as well because I have lots of pictures of things that students have created, but now I have to be in front of the camera again. So submitting those pictures, and I think that's about the main of it. Then we go to this event in May where they ask you to get up on stage in front of 400 or so people and give you your award, and that's it.
Is there a speech involved?
At what point
I heard there was a speech involved.
There better not be.
Maybe that's if you get teacher of the year.
So that's the video. It's okay. The only. So I had to sit in front of a camera and record 60-90 seconds answering a question. And of course, it did not go well the first time, so I had to do it again. And so I can only imagine what that.
Do we have access to this video?
I hope not.
You put it on the website.
I hope not.
For everyone to see. No. That way they could know.
So that day, it was like super humid outside too. So not only was my hair like stretched 10 feet away from my face, but I was shiny and I was like nervous and. It was a miserable experience. So.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's good. The reason I wanted to talk to you about this is because this is information that we all need.
Yeah.
Us people that have not been nominated yet or will get nominated. It's an interesting process.
It is. But I've turned in my pictures, and so we're just waiting for the dinner.
You know, moving on from that, yep. You know, I wanted to just talk about what's happening in your room because, a couple of things that made me curious to just talk to you about stuff that's happening in your room because we're kind of in the same coaching cycle right mm-hmm. now, right? And for just the audience, just so they know, we're going through a process of kind of revamping our pre-AP classes mm-hmm. in middle school.
Yep.
And we have, there's observation cycle and we kind of pick what we wanted to be observed on. Ours was today.
Yes.
Because she did everyone today,
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they come in and observe, then we debrief.
Yep.
Anyway, so the goal is to advance us forward. So I figured since we're kind of doing the same,
Let's talk about it.
Yeah, we're in the same thing. So I just wanted to chit chat. So yeah. what was the thing that you picked to be observed on for this cycle?
So I did the tiered assignment to where, I basically created a plan or a lesson, for just a normal pre-AP kid. And then I had to add some modifications for those lower pre-AP children and then add an extension for the higher pre-AP kids. So mine actually chose, we've been talking about moon phases lately. And I actually got with Tony Moreau. He's part of the coaching cycle too. And so him and then Melissa West, you've interviewed her as well. We all sat down and I had this plan and I'm like, okay, how can I make this extended? And it was a lot of fun, actually, the three of us kind of just collaborating together to see how we could create this extension for it. And it took us about 35 minutes for the three of us to finish the extension part. And so I was really excited, actually, to see how an eighth grader would be able to complete that. And they did it today, and I had a couple actually complete it all in one class period. So that was pretty interesting.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what was the process that you went with extending? So you started with the basic assignment.
Yeah. So we basically the extension, it can either, so if you have like a guiding question of, you know, of how many days are there between each lunar phase. So we did where they found their birthday moon phase. We looked up on a calendar and they found the moon phase for the next 6 days, 10 days, 12 days. And then they had to go back and predict what would their phase look like 3 days before their birthday, 6 days before their birthday. And so that was kind of the basic one.
Mm-hmm.
And so for my extension, for those kiddos that needed to take it a little bit further and already kind of knew how many days there were between each moon cycle or each moon phase, they had to actually predict what their moon phase would look like on their birthday next year. And so that kind of brought in a whole new level of thinking about 52 weeks a year, and we've got a cycle every 4 weeks, which means we've got we see 13 cycles within a year, and that's not going to be the exact same. And
mm-hmm.
they just had to do a lot of kind of problem solving and calculations to really come up with a good solid estimate as to what would be the next day. So it was really challenging for them, but it was really cool to see the collaboration between the two or three kiddos that were working on that specific extension.
Yeah, that's awesome. So how many did you say you finished it?
I probably had 4 or 5 finish it today, which was fine because it actually, the lesson that we planned out actually ended up being a lot longer than I thought it was going to be. So we are finishing up, the others of us are finishing up tomorrow. So it ended up being a 2-day lesson, which was no big deal. They were all the kiddos today were just really engaged with it, and which was surprising to me. And that's kind of what I was talking to about with John and Julie, is that I thought this was just a very simple kind of lesson, like finding the moon phase on your birthday, which, yes, it seems interesting, but I mean, every kid was like, ooh, I was born on a full moon and I was born on a waxing crescent. And so that was really cool to actually see them, you know, really engaged with it. So it's just a little surprising. I didn't think it was going to be that big of a deal, but it was.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you can get middle school kids to, like, talk about themselves in any aspect, like, you got some type of engagement going on.
And share it with others, absolutely.
That's all they care about.
Yeah.
Did you have to go the other way, too? So you extended, and then...
Yeah, so going the other way, I just basically let them use a couple of graphic organizers, and on that graphic organizer had a couple of questions, just guiding questions to help them think, okay, their moon cycle is 28 days. What's half of that? What are the 4 major moon cycles? Just to kind of collect their thoughts a little bit more so that they could answer the questions correctly.
So what was the basic assignment?
The basic assignment is for them to just find, to predict the moon phase before their birthday and then predict the moon phase in a month after their birthday.
Oh, yes. So the next one was next year.
Next year. Okay. Yes. And so they had to actually take a little bit more further.
Yeah, that's a lot of processing.
Uh-huh.
It's a lot of counting. I read all that good stuff.
It was fun to watch. And there were a couple that like threw their head back and like, I can't do this. And I'm like, yes, you can. And so they eventually got it. But it's fun to watch them do that, though. It really is. And it really like energized me. So they came and observed me. Second period is my first pre-AP class. And that's when they came and watched this. And my coaches were there. And so it was just a really, really cool, energizing experience. I'm like, the rest of the day is going to be awesome. Like, these kids they're really working hard. So it's cool.
Yeah. I mean, anytime we get those chances, that's why I love coaching cycles. Because it forces you to step outside of your comfort zone usually.
Yep.
But also, usually, if you're on a coaching cycle, like a positive one, you know, where you're actually, you know, not for bad things, but, you know, if you're actually developing.
Yeah.
You know, you're usually, like, I always try to step up my game a little bit, you know, and you try to do something you haven't done.
Yeah, absolutely.
Things like that. And that's...
Yeah, and that's what I was telling, too. Like, usually when we have, like, our PLC or our planning time, I don't normally get with Tony or Melissa or even Jessica to say, hey, this is the lesson I've got. What do you think about it? I mean, we vet our tests and things like that and look at data, but it really encouraged me to seek out, you know, their ideas more to... And just like you said, step up my game some too, because these kids deserve it. You know, they really do. And it was really encouraging to see how engaged they were with these. I'm like, why am I not doing this all the time?
Yeah.
Like, really, it really, you get so much bang for your buck if you, you know, just kind of go that extra step.
Yeah, it's true. And you don't have to fight them as much. I mean, engagement's always the key. Yeah. I mean, any training will tell you that, but you know, once that magic button hits, it does change. It changes the classroom environment. It changes behavior problems. It changes
everything.
How much they learn.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Out of curiosity, when you did your debrief today, right?
Yes.
So when you sat there and they were analyzing your lesson and like...
Yes,
you know,
pages of notes.
Yeah, was there... Did they give you critical advice that you saw and you were like, oh, I didn't even think of that?
So, you know... Unfortunately, first and second period, my second period is my first pre-AP, so they're kind of like my guinea pig class of, like, this is the first time I've ever done this lesson, and so I'm still working out the kinks with it and when I should say things and show them and model and all of that. And so that was some of their critique, is that I should have or needed to have modeled things a little bit, chunked it a little bit more, which I completely get. And I ended up doing throughout the day because I had 6 tables. And so 2 tables were my high tables, 2 tables were my middle, and then 2 tables were my lower. And so I felt like I was like bouncing around between them. Whereas if I would have chunked it a little bit more, I could have explained, okay, here's the broad picture of what we're all doing. Those of you over here, go ahead and get started on what you think you're supposed to be doing. Whereas I'm working with the lower ones, I'm like, okay, here's exactly what we're doing. This is what you need to do. Here are your materials. Any questions? Awesome. And then I go and work with the other ones who maybe have already gotten started, and then just kind of work through or answer any of their quick questions that I have. So it was helpful.
Did you get to debrief after that class?
It was after. It was 3 or 4 classes after.
So after you debriefed, you got to do it again?
Yes, one more time. And it went better.
Yeah, I'm jealous.
Yeah.
I had to wait all day.
Oh.
Because I have my last period off.
We'll just redo it tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's awesome because, I mean, same thing as you is my lesson. Because, you know, for, I've talked about this a few times, but I do 15 minutes of reading every day. That's the hill I'm dying on.
Dang.
Because, and I read with them. I don't step away, which is awesome because I get to read books.
Yeah.
It sucks because I got other crap to do.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And there's a million other things to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'll talk about the reasons behind that. Well, I'll say it now. So statistically, you know, when we get kids here, we don't inherit readers,
mm-hmm.
natural readers. Not like, I would say probably 95% of our students don't come to our school readers.
Right.
The only books they've ever read are books that, the teachers have read to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know,
yeah.
That's about it.
And there's no ownership in that.
Yeah, and so as a sixth grade teacher, we've taken on responsibility in our department to show them that they can finish books and to give them that confidence, because what happens with readers is that when they're in, you know, you hand them a text, the thing you're battling more often than not for kids that don't read is the fact that they have zero confidence in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like getting a kid in math class who has no confidence in math because they've always been bad at it.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it's just the fact they haven't had the right teacher teach them
right.
a certain way, right?
Right?
And I mean, that's with anything.
Yeah.
So that's the hill we're dying on. And it's been awesome
yeah.
because they've read tons of books. I mean, we got kids who, you know, walked in this year saying they hate reading and stuff, and they're on like book, you know, 30.
That's awesome.
So legit, and that's they're like, awesome. And they pass around, and they've all read so much that they've given books to each other.
Wow.
But because of that, I'm cutting a 8-minute class
yeah.
down 15 minutes
yeah.
every day. So my lessons have become micro-sized.
Right.
And or they extend for days.
For days.
So the lesson I did today was a very complicated lesson.
Uh-huh.
So we only got through a few rotations that we were doing.
Yeah.
So I get to do it again tomorrow. But I had a big debrief too, to where it was kind of the same thing as you though, to where if I would have just spread out my resources more intelligently,
mm-hmm.
then my time would have been used better in certain areas.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Of course, mine was more on differentiation. So the problem I ran into with my when we were looking at the lesson was the fact that they did rotations with different texts.
Okay.
And they had different levels of text.
Mm.
So, but my high group eventually reached that low text.
Mm-hmm.
So the differentiation had to come from a different area.
Right.
And, you know, they just gave me a few pointers on how to better structure
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I didn't think of that.
Yeah. Done.
You're smart.
Yeah. Thank
but
you.
That's, and
that's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, to the point of getting critical advice, people, you know, it's no secret, like, it's kind of awkward to have people watch you teach.
Mm-hmm.
And it's awkward for the kids because mm-hmm. you got two people walking in mm-hmm. and they're just observing and writing
yeah.
stuff down.
Yeah.
But even how awkward it is as a teacher to be analyzed, like there's so many more benefits.
Yes.
And that sucks.
Yeah.
Because we have to go through the process, but it's totally worth it.
It's totally worth it. And I think too, it's a lot of times teachers can't take the criticism. Like they feel that I've created this wonderful lesson and there's nothing wrong with it. And not that there's anything wrong with your lesson, but there's always another way to approach it or
yeah.
to conduct it. And so to just be open to that, I think is a huge, you know, benefit to help us be stronger and better at our craft. And so that's what I really strive for too, is to make sure that I'm open to any suggestion that comes across. You know, Melissa yesterday, she tried to tell me to do a choice board, and I was so against it. I was like, I'm not doing a choice board. I've done a choice board. I'm not doing a choice board tomorrow. That's not what I want to do. And she's like, okay, don't hate on the choice board, you know? And so I kind of, that negative part of my brain was kind of
yeah.
creeping in a little bit. And so I really try to keep an open mind. That criticism, healthy criticism, it's not a bad thing. Like, having
yeah.
people watch you and, you know, telling you, hey, try this next time. Like, what's the hurt in that? So
that's where it comes from, the whole idea, you know, there's memes all over the place where like teaching is an art or whatever, but it's both. It's a science and an art. Mm-hmm. There's a science to how the brain works, mm-hmm. and how you should teach certain ages, mm-hmm. and whatnot. And we have data upon data that just lecturing students doesn't work.
Right.
And things like that. Mm-hmm. But there is an art to where you have to be able to be malleable.
Mm-hmm.
Malleable?
Yeah.
Enough to where people on the outside who are educated and know what they're talking about can come in. They're going to see things wrong with what you're doing, regardless of if you're a third-year teacher or a 20-year teacher.
Yeah.
Because there's always something. Because it's one person teaching a lesson to 30 kids.
Yeah.
Or however big.
Yeah. And you're too, like, as you're teaching, you are so concentrated on making sure you get attendance and making sure that, for the most part, nobody is on fire. And, you know what I mean? Like, just all of these just whole things to where they have a really pinpoint eye of, well, I saw this person doing this, so maybe you can tweak this part to where they would all be engaged. And so it's just really helpful to have that other set of eyes.
Jumping a little bit,
okay.
I asked Toni Moreau, who you work with, I go, so tell me something about her room.
Oh, gosh.
I was like, just tell me something. I don't know, because I've never watched you teach. Mm-hmm. What? Mm-hmm. I've never watched you teach. I've never been in your room while you're teaching, whatever. I've walked in there maybe once or whatever, because you are out in the
boonies.
Yeah, you're on the boondocks of the school. I'm literally almost the farthest point away from you.
Yes.
So I never go out there. But one thing he mentioned was this thing that you do is called exitgrams.
Yes.
Is that the term?
Exitgram, yes.
Okay, so I want you to tell us about this because I think it's a brilliant idea.
Okay.
And I saw a picture of it. So
you did?
It's pretty sweet.
Where?
Instagram.
Oh, yeah. On
Which we'll talk about that too. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So.
So last year, so I saw this somewhat part of it when I was student teaching. One of the guys that he wasn't my cooperating teacher, but anyway, I saw him do an exit tweet to where, as his exit ticket, he had kids write on a laminated sheet of paper and they put it up, and he had a Twitter feed in his room. And so I totally copied that last year. I had an exit tweet in my room and had a whole sign, and every kid had their own. They were color coded, so I knew what classes were what, and that was our exit ticket out the door. So I put up a formative assessment on the board, they answer it, give me two hashtags, and we slapped it up there. And it worked pretty well, but I realized that kids don't really use Twitter. That is not a thing. They like Instagram. And I also realized if I used Instagram, then I could format my laminated cards in a way to where there's actually a picture portion. So kids who can explain, or if I have a diagram that needs drawing, I can actually add that instead of on the Twitter portion. So I've changed it this year to exitgrams. So I use it as a formative assessment. Most of the time, they have to add two hashtags every time that they answer the question. So one of those hashtags is letting me know how they feel about their work that day. So it's either hashtag I got this, hashtag maybe, or hashtag I'm stuck, to where I know if they're answering the question and it's completely wrong and they think that they have this, we've got some major interventions that need to happen there. Whereas it's the other way, then it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I use Exitgram in my room.
So do they put them up, or do you pick them up?
They put them up. So it has, even on the Exitgram, it has a little heart on there for me to like it. So when I go and check them, I just either put my initials or color in their heart to know that, yep, that's right, you've got it, you know, you're on the right track, kind of thing.
So how often do you do it?
I try to get at least two or three a week is my goal. Doesn't always happen, but that is my goal, two or three a week.
Yeah, formative assessment. See, this is the thing.
Where you're losing your 15 minutes of reading.
Yeah, it really is. Like, honestly, because that's, you know, I can only condense a lesson so much. And usually, you know, what it's coming down to for me is, you know, we'll ask less amount of certain questions, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So if my goal is to dive deep into the characterization of something,
mm-hmm.
then the easier questions, you know, usually don't even exist, or that's what we talk about. And then, you know, they do three really in-depth questions.
Right.
But I'm totally lost on the formative assessment piece. And next year we're getting shorter classes.
Exactly. So I know. And I still do a bell ringer. And so basically 3 minutes for a bell ringer and 3 minutes for the exitgram. And so I've already, you know, that's the 6 minutes or so that we're losing next year. So I'm not sure how I'm going to, you know, I may not keep it next year. I may change it, but The kids seem to like it. They always like using dry erase markers because they're laminated, so it's, and it's got a magnet on the back of it, so it just
gets... Oh, so you reuse them.
I reuse them, yeah.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah.
I was like, man, that's a lot of paper comics. No, no, no. So that's what would have happened if I would have done it.
Well, no, so like the first day of school, they come up with their handle name and they have to put their actual name underneath it, and then I laminate them the next day and cut them out, and we put a little magnet on the back and they get stuck up on the wall, so... It works well, and it's they love writing on those. They love dry erase markers. I don't understand, but they do. Yeah. And so it's a great way to great tool to use, obviously, if there's time. So
I wonder if there would be, I was just brainstorming. Like, it would be cool. Like, you know those, there's an app. I don't know what it's called, but mm-hmm. where you can, like, kids hold up a thing, and you can take a picture of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, what's that called? I know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking
about? Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Someone out there in the mm-hmm. world right now, they
it's
either know
come
it.
To me. They already know it.
Comment on the Facebook and remind me if I don't think of it by then. But, it'd be, because it takes time to go through it, I imagine.
Uh-huh.
I mean, is it?
It does.
So it would almost, I wonder if you could incorporate that somehow into that.
Oh, yeah.
Just Plickers. To slow it down a bit. Plickers.
There we That's go. It.
So if you don't know about it, you need to Google that. Plickers. Because it's awesome.
Yes. Yeah, and usually a lot of my formative assessments are maybe only one or two questions to where I'm looking for, like, specific words that they mention.
Yeah.
So I'm not necessarily reading the entire caption that they have. And obviously if we have pictures, then our pictures are super easy for me to see.
Mm-hmm.
But more so, I'm really worried on those hashtags of if they feel they've got it or if I need to, spend a little bit extra time for them or with them.
Yeah.
So.
Do you use that? I mean... The formative assessment is really to, guide and structure and whatever. But how often do you, like, see that and go, oh, we missed something, and then you go back? Do you cover that in your bell ringer, or do you just try to incorporate it into your lesson?
Yeah, so bell ringers are huge, and that's where I kind of pick up on that. But if, like, the whole class didn't get it, then I just, that next day, I'm like, okay, we're moving our lessons down a day, and let's try this again. So, but if it's only a couple of kiddos... then, I'll have just a quick one-on-one with them or even just invite them to tutoring. And sometimes I'll write that on theirs, like, come see me for tutoring.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of up to them to make sure that they come and get that extra help.
That's awesome. Yeah. So tutoring real quick.
Yeah.
This is another thing that I'm slowly, as my experience grows, I'm doing more and more of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's probably because I'm getting harder as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So it's they're having to do something.
Yeah.
But how do you approach, like, your tutoring? Do you just have a standard time?
Yeah, or? So, and I'm in the same boat as you. I'm learning. And, like, this year I feel like I have asked more of kids. So my expectations have gone up.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing, but I'm still working on holding them to that expectation. And so I feel that I'm going to keep getting harder as the years go on. So I love that you mentioned that. I'm glad I'm not in my own boat on that.
That's why we do the podcast, because right? everyone listens to this and goes, yes, someone else doesn't do tutoring or do it or struggling right. with it.
So, I mean, all my kids know that I live so far away, not so far away, but I live pretty far away that I have to miss traffic. So I get here by 7:30 usually every morning. And so all kids know that, so that I'm here in the mornings. Thankfully my duty in the afternoon is in the afternoon on Mondays and Tuesdays. And so they just know that I'm here in the mornings and that if they want to see me in the afternoons, they just have to let me know that they are coming. I don't really assign a whole lot of homework, just because I know that they have a lot of homework with math and reading that I don't really want to add something else to them. And really I haven't been blessed, I guess, with the homework coming back in most cases, and mm-hmm. I have to kind of hunt it down. So I do a lot of stuff in class where I take grades in class rather than it going home. So I really only have to open my tutoring for kids who are struggling and aren't getting it in class and need that more one-on-one. So, I mean, they just tell me when they need to come in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's kind of how I've been playing it too. But
I know there could be better ways.
Sure. So if anyone knows,
help us maybe, out.
Yeah, we need to do it's really just a balancing act for, what you do and whatnot. Because usually what happens when I have a student that comes in for tutoring, it's not like I can pull out a math equation.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And for science, I would imagine it's even pretty tough because it's like...
Yeah. I mean, I can still have just a quick conversation of, okay, where are we struggling? What vocab words are we not sure about? So maybe we create some Freyr models or something like that to kind of help, you know, close those gaps. Or if they're struggling on this worksheet that we try to do in class, then we, you know, go over that together kind of thing. But yeah, I could see how reading.
Well, the difficulty with reading is, you know, for the, you know, if we're focusing on the reading star and everyone who's listening is just groaned because, you know, standardized testing, whatever. Anyway, so it's live, so get over it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, I mean, if we're focusing on, you know, the standards, rather, our standards are, they're hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a few, like figurative language, you know, we can sit there and talk about metaphors and I can show them metaphors and that's very easy. But if we're talking about making high-level inferences about an expository text...
Yeah.
I mean, it's a...
I've checked out already.
Yeah,
That's my math science brain is like, peace out.
Well, it's a, you know, I'm a doctor. I, you know, prescribe solutions, but I also have to diagnose the problem. Mm-hmm. And to do that, I have to watch someone read. I have to listen to someone read out loud. I have to do this. Yeah. I have to talk to them to see if they're comprehending certain things.
Yeah.
And that's an entire process. And if I got four kids that come into tutorials for four different issues...
No.
Yeah, so I just haven't figured out the best way to do it. Usually what happens is I just spend time with one each. But it's just feels like
could you have it to where like every Monday is a certain issue, quote unquote issue, or certain kind of concept that you're like all the kids would be reading out loud, or would that work or not?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I could Allegria, I think it was my first year here. Maybe it was last year. Maybe he does it all the time. I don't remember. I remember seeing it one time. He, to get prepared for the star test, he, you know, put up a big chart in the hallways.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, you know, this week, this is what we're working on. Mm-hmm. This week, this is what we're working on.
Yeah.
So I guess that could be
a
certain thing. Specifically for units, you know, and I just have to be clear, like, this is what we're going over.
Right.
This is what we do it. We do bounce around a little bit in reading because... the test that they have to take, they have to be able to read poetry, fiction, and expository. You never know what order they're going to come in.
Right.
You don't know which ones they're going to do. So they have to be able to jump from one to one another. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how we teach.
Yeah, that
so
makes
that's
sense.
How our standards go. So could be difficult, but that's an idea to definitely put out there. I'll have to think on it.
Yeah. You let me know when you figure it out.
Yeah, I got you.
Please.
You know, sort of on the line of time,
mm-hmm.
time management. I've been thinking about this a lot since, you know, as I said, we're losing time next year because we're adding, we're becoming a school of specialization, right?
Leadership.
For leadership.
Whoop.
It's because of Whitfield. Yeah. It's no, I'll give you a whoop, whoop. Hey, I'm on the curriculum team, so we're helping write.
I heard actually, by the way, kudos to you that you wrote some stellar lessons.
And you heard about that.
Yes. So
that's funny.
Awesome. I can't
that's
wait
cool.
to actually read it.
I'm glad people are talking.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Yeah.
I like lesson planning.
Yeah.
That's kind of...
do you lesson plan... I'm sorry. I'm turning
no, you're fine.
The tables
Go ahead.
On you.
Good.
Do you lesson plan with others or is it by yourself?
It balances. The relationship that I have with Marcia Smithy, who I did a podcast on, with she... You know, we have an interesting... The way we balance stuff because... A lot of it comes from, because I'm a big planner. I love planning, but I also love pushing boundaries, and I love just scratching everything and doing everything.
Yes.
From, like, all right, let's, brand new, let's go.
Yeah.
She's been teaching for however long.
Right.
She's not in that life 100% of the time. So a lot of the times it'll be like, you know, she'll bring something to the table, and then we'll work with that and change it.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the times I just come in, and I'm like, boom, you know, she'll point out some flaws and then we'll roll with it.
Cool.
So, you know, I definitely, this year I've taken the leadership role with planning. I don't think she would dispute that. And I also, you know, I've been really focusing on pre-AP, so.
Yeah.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah, it did.
But,
I was just curious.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally, you know, I'm definitely the, I'm the architect of certain things. That's how I like to do it. But this year I've kind of taken a different approach. As the year's gone on, and I've been more inclined to do units, which I didn't really do before. It was like, okay, we're doing poetry, so we're going to read a bunch of different poems. This year, for instance, I just did an Emily Dickinson unit for my pre-AP classes. And their mission at the end of the unit was to be able to tell me why she became a recluse.
That's cool.
Because she locked herself in the room.
Yeah.
She didn't leave. She didn't do anything. She talked to people through doors. She didn't even go downstairs to talk to her or see her dead dad at the funeral.
Yeah.
Right? So super weird.
Yeah.
But she's one of the greatest poets ever. And she only, you know, she published 12 poems in her life, or like less than a dozen.
Mm-hmm.
And but she wrote over like 3,000 or something like that.
Wow.
And they didn't come out until she was dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that's kind of what I was interested in PBL because, which we'll mention in a second.
Yeah, sorry.
But anyway, no, I'm ADD anyway. The unit was that, uh-huh. But the way we got to there was we read biographies about mm-hmm. her just to get her history and mm-hmm. whatnot. And they're like, well, why? You know, she seems normal. She went to college. She did all that. And then we went to, some weird stories about her as an adult, locking herself in her room. And then we read some of her poetry. And then we read people's, we got to the point we were analyzing her dashes. We read an article about someone who analyzed her use of dashes because she did them all over the place. And it's not like normal dash poetry, And the students were in it. They were like, what does this mean? And like, girl, what my shining moment in this unit was, girls were like inspired by her because, there was a theory that she used these dashes because it was like her strike against the standard grammatical use. She was like, I don't want to be a part of your society. Mm-hmm. I am my own person. I don't care what you want, you know?
Wow.
And she was like in your face and girls were like, holy crap.
Yeah.
And I was like, there you go. Positive role model. You know, she might have been a little crazy, but...
It's okay, we all are.
Yeah,
it's fine.
But, you know, and the fact that the unit went so well and I got to pull in, you know, poetry and expository and biography and all this, it was a win.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was super cool. And that's after I did that unit, I was like, I need to do my entire year like this in chunks.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've been, I think what I'm going to do next year is I'm going to do it in books.
Yeah.
So there'll be like 7 books in the year. They'll read on their own still.
Right.
That's still an important piece.
Right.
But I think I'm going to do 7, 7 novels that we pull certain things from and do expository and, do all that.
That's
and those
awesome.
Will be our units. Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Very cool.
That'll be an update. Season 2 of Teach Me Teacher.
Stay tuned.
But what I wanted to ask about time management in the sense that next year we're going to be shorter classes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm worried about my SSR time.
Mm-hmm.
In getting that piece done, the fact that they need to read in reading class, mm-hmm. right? What about your experiments? Experiments take time.
A lot of time.
Right? So how are you, one of the things I talked with John Bowles about was our academic coach, he was like, the piece that I might be thinking about is not necessarily getting rid of SSR, but moving into, maybe some types of homework every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And homework's such a dirty word, man. So like, I was just curious, what are your thoughts on the fact that we're losing time next year?
Yeah.
You are in a very specific thing to where, experiments.
Yeah, they have to happen. We're actually supposed to do labs 40% of the time.
Yeah.
Which is a lot, which is awesome. They need to have those hands-on experiences because they don't get those everywhere. For sure, though, next year, not doing a bell ringer, not doing an exogram on the days that we have experiments. That just can't happen. Even this year, we have to kind of pick and choose the experiments that we can conduct because of the time that we have. Obviously, we try and set everything up, as much as we can. Say, okay, come in. Here's your, the steps that you need. But really this year, I've tried to, at least with my pre-AP classes, is to move away from the step-by-step labs and give them more inquiry labs. So where they have just a question and here are some materials and you have to answer this question by showing me some data using these materials. And so that's actually been really interesting. It does take longer, but if I can sacrifice maybe some other days to where, if they're getting the vocabulary within this inquiry lab, then I don't have to spend a day on making sure that they know what vocabulary is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of just have to make up time elsewhere. But yeah, I'm a little nervous.
It's going to be hard.
Aspect of next year. It's going to be difficult.
Because we have the same problem.
Yeah.
In essence, it's just different skill sets, but... kids in reading class need to read.
Yeah.
Kids in science class need to do,
they gotta do
science.
Yeah. They gotta blow stuff up.
Well, and it takes, the interesting thing about science is that it takes time to ask questions.
Exactly. Like, you have to, I mean, doing the lab is one thing, but if I'm just going to do the lab and not put any kind of bow at the end on top of it of why did I do this lab? What does this lab have anything to do with our standard that we're talking about? What questions do I have based off of my results and the data that I got? I mean, if we don't have time to answer those questions or to let the kids process that, then what's the point in doing the lab? I mean, I can tell you all day long, you know, that a convection cell, the hot's going to rise and the cool is going to sink.
Right.
But if you don't have that, you know, experience with it and then be able to ask those questions and really dig deep with that data, then there's no point in me showing you that. So I see the need for labs and the need to get those kids and those experiences. And so I just have to eat the time somewhere else and to make up the time somewhere else.
Yeah, and if I had to pick anything that, like, you know, people whine a lot about public education and whatnot, this is probably the biggest thing that we battle. You know, it's not really the lack of resources teachers figured out.
Yeah.
We buy it all. We do whatever. Yeah, I mean, whatever. Yeah. And if you're lucky with, like, us, I mean, we have a principal who, you know, he supports, you know, everything. Like, anytime we have finance things, he's like, yeah, I got you. Whatever.
Yeah.
So that's certainly not the problem. The problem is time.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that we have to dedicate so much time to other things that aren't going away, like standardized testing.
Yeah.
We used a whole day to do a mock STAR test, and then we had to look at the data.
Mm-hmm.
We had to show the kids the data,
mm-hmm.
And all this other stuff. And I'm not necessarily complaining about that because that is useful.
Yeah.
But it's the fact that you eat your time.
Yeah.
All the time.
Right. And if we didn't have to, like, worry so much about, not that we necessarily teach to the test,
mm-hmm.
but, I mean, they do have to do those mock days. We do have to talk about the data. We do have to take these CBAs to make sure we're all on the same, you know, level playing field. So when that STAR test comes around, we're all, you know, aren't surprised by the results or anything. But, I mean, if we could just take all that away, then I would have plenty of time for them to dig deep enough to where I know that they're learning. And I, you know, I don't have to prove to you that they are. They will do that for you.
Yeah.
You know, they'll show you that.
A lot. I think what's probably going to come down for me and you next year, you know, science and ELA, is really cutting out anything that doesn't go to what exactly we want.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, you know, when I'm looking at it, it's, I need to make sure that the questions that they're responding to, right? So the things I can't cut out reading, because
mm-hmm.
That's literally the title of what I teach, right?
Yeah. You're dying on that hill.
Yeah, so can't cut that out.
Uh-huh.
And there's data to support why I shouldn't, obviously. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's other things, you know, like the way we do vocabulary practice.
Yeah.
The district has pushed us to do this thing called Word Within a Word,
mm-hmm.
Which it's, you know, it's basically a way to know, like, prefixes and suffixes mm-hmm. and stuff. Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Takes a lot of time, and I've pushed it a little bit, and I've done it a little bit this year, but probably next year I'm just going to have to revamp, you know, how we learn those skills.
Right. We'll just have to be really intentional, you know, and not have that fluff activity, you know, because we're not going to have any extra time. So be just really intentional with the time we do have and what you're going to get your most bang for your buck for.
Yeah. You know? So, well, science, like, because there, when it comes to, like, your experiments that you do in eighth grade,
mm-hmm.
is there anything that requires a lot of cleanup or a lot of prep that day? Because the kids coming in, you know, the period after yours, I mean, mm-hmm. you have to have cleanup time and all that, right? So is there, could you imagine an experiment that you might not be able to get through because of the time change?
Possibly. I mean, we do a DNA lab in the very beginning of the year, and they have to have a certain amount of time to where their DNA can be extracted. So, I mean, I can't take that part out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we may be able to speed up some other aspects, or I might just have to have double. So I've got one class going, and I already have second period stuff ready to go. And then while second period's doing it, I'm cleaning up the first class, you know. Just have to kind of be smart with our time in that realm. It's going to be a challenge.
Are there any, you know, staying on the subject of experiments and stuff, mm-hmm. are there any experiments that you do that's different in pre-AP? Like, do y'all do different experiments in pre-AP, or?
I don't do a very good job with that, so I'm going to say no right now and just be completely honest with that. However, I do want to move into a different aspect of that. So There are times this year, though, that I might just do a demonstration with my on level, but then we'll actually let my pre-AP kids do the lab because they can usually get it done much quicker and can start processing that information. Whereas on level, I really have to be do step one, do step two, do step three. Okay, now what do you think about it? I mean, it's just a little bit more directed. And so that's one way that I change it. I do not like that. That is not something that I am proud of. And so I'm always trying to look for ways to be better. And that's one thing I need to work on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm the same way too. I mean, when it comes to, that's the big thing. That's why I think we're overhauling pre-AP is because, you know, that's also the downside of doing two on level and pre-AP.
Yeah.
Which is why I think teachers.
We know.
Everyone has heard me. Well, I really do think, I mean, the downside to one teacher teaching all pre-AP is the fact that that teacher better be on it, or your pre-AP scores are going to suck that year. But that, I mean, you can fix that. I mean, that's training issues. That's getting to where you need to be. But I mean, when you split teachers and you have on level and pre-AP, you're splitting how much time they put into each thing, and you can only divide a teacher so many times.
Sure. Yeah.
And we feel it every day.
Yeah. Well, so my schedule this year, I have an inclusion class first period, and then I teach four classes of pre-AP, and then I end my day with an inclusion class. And I love my schedule. I really do. I love my kids. But it is a struggle of me kind of churning my brain, thinking, okay, now I need to do it this way for the next four classes, and then turning my brain back the other way. So I could see, you know, maybe if they were chunked together, you know, if I could do all my inclusion maybe in the morning and then pre-AP after that. But I agree with you, too, onto an aspect. So, but I went to this APSI training this summer. And the...
Which one did you get? Oh, you went to a science one.
Yeah, the one at UTA in June? End of June?
Oh, I went to TCU.
Oh.
We could have been together, but we went to different colleges.
Yes. And so... the instructor there, though, the very first day, she said basically along the lines of pre-AP kids get this, I guess, quote or just this kind of overlying thing that they are good behavior kids. That's why they're pre-AP. Whereas our shift should be more that we are preparing these kids for AP classes. Yeah. So it's not that they are just the good behavior kids, because that is not a true statement.
Nope.
But our job and our goal is to, when they get to those AP classes in high school, to thrive and stick with those really hard, tough classes because they've been prepared for it. And so that's really what has motivated me this year in really looking at those pre-AP classes and those kiddos and thinking, okay, in 2 years, you know, when they're taking these AP level classes, they have to do this, they have to do this, and they have to do this. There's no question about that. So how can I and what can I do now to prepare them for that?
Yeah.
So.
You know what? It's interesting that you bring that up, because I haven't talked about that since like episode 4.
Jeez, long time ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago, right? Almost a year or, you know, a school year ago.
Yeah.
It's interesting they bring that up, because that was my first institute like that to go to. And the thing I walked away from that was, because I went and sat in, I did a couple middle school things, you know, and I got a lot of that, but then I also spent like a whole day at like high school level stuff.
Oh.
You know, 12th graders, you know, the type of writing that they have to do, the
AP test that they have to
do. And the essay and the poetry they have to respond to.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy moly, we got Shel Silverstein in sixth grade, and they're doing this just a few years later.
Right?
My God. And that was, you know, it was good for me to see that, because I was like, yeah, you know, there's certain things that are good. You know, we need to do certain things with on level. You have, in on level here, I mean, we, you know, in one class, you can have a kid that, you know, is really high level and doing things, but you also have a kid that doesn't know English.
Exactly.
And, you know, and that's
a
really,
whole other part.
So it's different, but with those AP, those pre-AP, you know, people always, you know, it is, oh, you have pre-AP, you know. Oh.
You don't have any issues.
Yeah, and it's
They're
like, what are you,
good for you? Like,
sit in my class. Because it's not that. You know, we have, there's, just because they're smart doesn't mean they're well-behaved.
Exactly.
And just because they're a hard worker doesn't mean that they instantly understand
exactly
everything, because there's different levels of kids that goes to that AP. But for us to get them ready, like, we have to, like, really up the rigor. Mm-hmm. Like, way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think we're on the process of that this year. But next year.
Yeah. I'm really excited for next year.
So, let's talk PBL real quick.
Let's do it.
So, you know more about it than me.
Oh, but I don't.
So, let's talk about what we do know.
Well, I do know that when I was student teaching, we went and visited a campus in Arlington who did strictly PBL. So, we actually sat in a math class. And we actually went and toured, I think, the Coppell New Tech school that we toured this year. They do PBL also. Mm-hmm. And so, at any given point, a kid, if they are in all pre-AP classes, at least here at Richland next year, they will and should have a PBL, so a project-based learning, PBL. They should have a project in every class that they're working on. And so those projects take anywhere from like 3 weeks to 6 weeks to complete. But within that, they have different checkpoints. They're working with a group, so they have different roles within that group. You can actually get fired from your group if you are not doing the tasks that you've signed up to do. If you're not being responsible for your work for the group can actually fire you to where you have to do it on your own, which I think I don't know how that's really going to work next year, but we'll see. You can ask for help from the teacher. So when you maybe are stuck at some parts that you aren't sure about, then you can sign up for a time where you can get like some one-on-one tutoring with that teacher, with your group. But then at the end of it, so you're answering like this guiding question, and through this whole thing, you've been learning all of these different standards along the way. And then this product that you produce has, you know, covered 3 or 4 or however many standards you can fit within that. And so they have this mastery level, you know, as they're working collaboratively with their groups. So it should be interesting. We've got a lot of training.
Yeah, we have training coming up.
To make sure that we do it right.
I'm sure we'll have...
What do you know about PBL?
I mean, that's pretty much it. I mean, you knew more about it than I did. I just know... Originally, I thought it was problem-based learning.
I think I've heard it that way, too.
I mean, I guess it's essentially the same thing.
You still have, like, a question that you're trying to answer.
Yeah. See, and I think this will work really well with my units that I'm kind of planning.
Absolutely.
I like the idea. Mm-hmm. I wonder... The thing I worry about me... As I get tired of thinking about the same thing over and over again, my first year I really struggled with it because I was, you know, my first year I was leaning heavily on my partner, Melinda Bowles, who was awesome.
Yeah.
But she would be like, hey, we're going to do this for like 4 days. Mm-hmm. And they have this checkpoints to hit. And I was like, sweet. By day two, I was like, kill me. Like, I do not want to hear about this anymore.
Yeah, you're going to have to get over that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm slowly getting there.
Yeah.
I did it with Emily Dickinson. I did 2 weeks of that.
Yeah.
What, you know,
Yeah. I think that, I mean, obviously there's a lot of learning that we have to do as educators to make sure that we are presenting and really giving the kids a chance to complete these projects correctly, if you will, and not just it being, I have to do this PBL, so here you go kind of thing. Like, I really want it to be something that has meaning behind it. And another cool aspect, though, that we saw at Coppell is that, so here on campus right now, you have your planning period and then you have PLC, and PLC is within your science or my science and then your ELA. Mm-hmm. So next year, there's going to be a day every week, I think, or something like that, to where all of the pre-AP teachers, or at least half of them, can get together. So you and I can collaborate and vet basically our next project of like, okay, here's the question that I have. Here are all the checkpoints. What's good about this? Where am I missing things? And that kind of thing, which I'm really excited about.
Because yeah.
that lends itself too to kind of more of that cross-curricular, you know, putting in reading, you know, where I can, or putting in math where I can, taking science into reading and that kind of thing.
See, you know, briefly, the things that you know, John Bowles was telling me about this in reading's role is reading gets to play an interesting thing because I can do any of it. Mm-hmm. I can bring in science. I can bring in math. I can bring in social studies.
Yeah.
And I think that's eventually going to be my role, not only getting them to be quality readers, but to be quality readers of many types of documents in, you know, all of this cross-curricular stuff.
Teacher of the year next year.
Yeah, ELA. We'll see how it works. But I think that's really the role of ELA because we're the fundamental skill that they need in everything.
And that's true. I mean, the STAR test that they take in science, it's basically another reading test. Yes. I mean, there are problems that are an entire page long because they have to read a paragraph of a question and then answer it. I'm like, that is not asking a science question. Yeah. That's asking, can you read this and figure out or infer from there, you know, what they're asking.
And this is why the district, you know, when I talked to Dr. Clark on the podcast, she was... You know, we're this big push for literacy. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone here has to read Donalyn Miller's, all the coaches have to read Donalyn Miller's A Book Whisperer, which is the book that changed the way I do my classroom. Yeah. And now everyone else has to read it. By the way, Donalyn, you're coming on the podcast. I'm going to get her on this. I mention her name every episode, I feel like. But no, in that, you know, social studies, it's just an ELA classroom where you're reading one big, long book. Yeah. Old book, right?
Yeah.
So that is a big thing.
Right.
Anyway.
Yes.
I got one final question for you.
Okay.
Okay? Mm-hmm. I want to end the episode. I want someone, you know, if you had, you know, you're a second year teacher of the year teacher, right?
Really? Yes.
I had to put it in there one more time.
Just one more time.
But, you know, there's things that you've done that have obviously reaped success. Mm-hmm. You know, enough for people to notice, right? To want to put you on a pedestal, even though you don't want it. Mm-hmm. So what would you tell someone who, you know, there's a variety of people who listen to this podcast. There's new teachers. There's teachers that have been teaching for a long time. There's administration. Mm-hmm. What would you tell someone in education? If they were like, what's your best advice? What do you got for them? What's gotten you to the point to where you're at now that you wish you would have known?
So Melinda Bowles has this on her laptop. I snuck a peek of it. It's like the sticky note that she has, and it says something of like, would I want to be a student in my class? And so I think thinking about that drives me to be a better teacher every day. Like, would I want to be a student in my class? If I'm going to say no to that, then what is the point of me even being here or teaching? So my tip, or what I would say, or what I wish somebody would have told me, is to work really hard, but make it intentional. Don't just do something because somebody else has said, oh, you should do this lesson, it's really good. Or I've done this for the last 10 years, you should do it, it's really good. You know, like, always really try to have your kids' interest and their success as a number one priority, and what they're interested in, and get them engaged into your lessons and into your content. And to just really just work hard at that and make that a priority and not necessarily the actual lesson itself. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think it's good advice.
I don't know if I really answered the question. It's really good in my head.
No, it is. I mean, it's perfect. I mean, it's the, you know, I think that's a perfect way for you to look at it because, you know, and when it comes down to it, you're teaching kids.
Yeah.
You know, a variety of ages, right?
Right.
But we're dealing with kids. Mm-hmm. And even though our content's important and data's important and getting them to understand stuff's important, it's important that, like, they're humans.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
I mean, they only get 12 of us.
Right.
You know, like, in the bare minimum, they get 12 of us.
Yeah.
Right? That's a lot of, like, the small group that can affect them for the rest of
their
life.
Forever. And that's just a huge, I don't want to say burden because that's not at all what that is, but it's just a huge responsibility to take on, is that, you know, you are responsible for making sure that those kids know your content, obviously, but for me, it's more important more of a priority to feel confident in the content, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So to know that I can tackle this, like, I may not know 100% what this is talking about, but I have enough confidence to know, you know, that I can get through this and I can overcome this and I'm not going to be scared of it and I'm going to keep pushing and not give up. So that's one thing that I always want my kids to walk away with, is just knowing that they can do it and not to give up.
Yeah, I mean, when I think of the teachers who affected me, and I'm friends with a lot of them. I work with a lot of them now because I'm in the same district. But they're the people who, you know, I don't really remember their lessons.
No.
Except for Hammer. I remember every one of her lessons, but she's ridiculous rock star.
Yeah.
She, you know, I remember how they treated me and how they made me a better person.
Right.
And I didn't have a lot of good influences growing up. So, like, they, I had my teachers.
Yeah.
And they're the major reason why I don't suck.
Yeah.
As a person. You know what I mean? Just to put it, just to put it out there.
It's true. I mean, yeah. We see them every day, probably more hours than they actually see, you know, their parents, unfortunately, at times. Mm-hmm. And we definitely have that influence on them. And so to instill any little part in them of, yes, you can, and you're going, you know, you can do this. That's huge, you know?
Now write this response. Like,
but, I mean, that's just, that's what drives me.
You heard it first from the teacher of the year of Richland Middle School.
Yes. Yeah.
It was wonderful, Lindsay.
Thank you for having me.
Was it as bad as you thought it was going to be?
You know, I mean, right now I would say no, but I'm pretty sure when I go back and hear this, I'm like, what did I say?
It was beautiful. People are going to be inspired by this.
I doubt it.
We talked about a lot of things that were useful, inspiring, some logistics. They got to see a struggle.
Yeah.
With certain topics.
Yeah.
That's real talk right there.
It's real talk.
Wasn't planned. I didn't write the questions for some of those. It's just going in. For everyone listening, this has been Teach Me Teacher. Go to teachmeteacherpodcast.com where you can get every episode. You can get it on iTunes. Our listenership is growing. You know, we just celebrated our 800 downloads in 1 month, which is crazy.
Insane.
Last month. So every month, we know we're just the, our graph is just going exponentially that way. So whoever's sharing it and doing it, you're doing the right thing. Like us on Facebook, do all that good stuff, ladies and gentlemen. Until next time, have a good one.